I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we don't have any accounts payables that we accept?
Not yet.
I had some, as you know, I had some last Thursday that I reviewed.
Do we have those for approval or no?
No.
You just don't have the sheet.
I just have my list.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we get it. Yes. Otherwise, I don't know what we do. Sounds good.
Table it?
Let's table it.
Yeah.
I move that we table the accounts payable till we get the sheets, till
second.
The rest of our agenda for today.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I didn't see anything on the consent agenda, so. But did you have any?
I have no comments.
I guess my comment would be you did a great job on the letters.
Okay, thanks.
And the agenda packet. Good job.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, C, D, E, F, and G.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Check.
Okay. All right. So we have Jessica Bolland. How do you say your last name?
Bolland.
Bolland.
Like Holland.
Every time we have to think about it.
Yeah.
Bolland.
Yeah.
To present us an update on the Northwest Workforce Board? Area?
Area.
Office?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't have a board anymore,
yeah,
which is part of why we're doing this.
Great.
Yeah.
It's all good.
The Northwest Workforce Area.
Yeah.
Lovely. All right, go ahead.
Okay, cool.
Good.
So I did want to give like a little bit of background on why we scheduled this with you guys. I'm a director for a 10-county area that includes Route, and so between now and March, I'm doing this in all 10 counties, just giving an update to commissioners. And the reason for that is because we used to have a board that required local elected official participation. And I've been in my role about 3.5 years. Pretty much for all of that time, Carrie Hermasinski was our board representative. I think Beth, you came to our final meeting when the board voted to dissolve itself.
It was all my fault.
Beth killed it. That was
they were
she's like,
well,
I don't
Beth's
need any
here.
More meetings. Get it off the agenda. So real quickly, just the workforce system in a nutshell. In Colorado, there are 10 federally recognized workforce areas, and that's a designation that comes from the U.S. Department of Labor. It largely has to do with population size. So in Colorado, 9 of the 10 workforce areas are county run, and they're in what we would consider more of a metro area, plus Mesa County is its own county run. And then the 10th workforce area is what's called the Rural Consortium, and it's made up of 51 county areas, including Route, so a very large region. And that, because it's 51 counties is so large, is further broken down into sub-areas, and so usually a sub-area is like 5 counties. So the Northwest is one sub-area, so Grand Jackson, Route, Moffett, and Rio Blanco had its own board for years and years, and that's meaningful because that's how our funding gets broken out, is within that 5-county region. So the workforce, the federal workforce areas, including the Rural Consortium, are required by law to have a governance board. That board continues to exist, and we can talk more about that if you have questions about that
that's
at all.
For the 51
It's for the 51 county area, exactly.
And Clark is
The director.
Director
yep.
of that.
Yep. He's the director for the consortium, so
right.
he, my boss.
Yes.
Yep. So sub-areas have the option to have boards. So that was a change that happened in statute in 2016. It went from a must to a may. And so
federal statute?
No, state statute.
State statute.
Yep.
Okay.
The federal government doesn't say anything about a sub area. They only care about their federal designated workforce regions, so the 51 county area. Anything about a sub region lives inside of Colorado by statute, and that was updated when we had some legislative changes in 2016, and they said at the sub area level you can have a board, but you don't have to. And so that's what gave us the flexibility to decide, do we want to continue to have board meetings? We had been in the habit of meeting on a quarterly basis. We strive for majority private business representation, although that was always a little bit tricky to come by. And those meetings, I think, had a lot of great networking benefit, but the geographic area was so large that there wasn't a lot that we could come up with to do that was actionable, just because this, you know, between looking at Winter Park all the way to Rangeley was what we were talking about. We didn't share a labor shed, you know, we didn't share common employers. It just, it was kind of nice to meet, but we weren't doing anything. There wasn't a lot of, like, strategic direction there. And so the board voted to dissolve in early 2019 was our sayonara meeting. The local elected officials previously, it was one of the boards and commissions that each county had to assign a local elected official to participate in. And so one of the things that the commissioners requested when we made that determination to dissolve the board was that in lieu of that board meeting from the commissioner's perspective, that there would be annual updates provided to each board of county commissioners on workforce efforts and what's going on in the workforce. Hence, here we are. So this would be the first one of those. We didn't do any in 2019 because we had our last meeting in January. The other thing that I did want to mention, so that consortium board, that 51 county board, it meets three times a year. They are always looking for local elected official representation. It's a very hard thing to get commissioners to participate in. Two of the meetings are in person. One of the meetings is virtual. They, I think, do a really excellent job staffing those meetings and trying to make the content really relevant and interesting for everyone. If it's something that either of you or two of you
returns. So who appoints that board? Self-appointed?
That's a great question.
Is it like governor appointed or?
It's not governor appointed. So the state has a board. The Colorado Workforce Development Council is the state's workforce board, and that is governor appointees. The consortium board, I don't believe that it's governor appointed. If I'm remembering the paperwork correctly, so I think the commissioner's on it.
Give us some more information.
We
can help with that and find out somebody out of your 10 area county. I'm sure we can round up somebody that would be interested in
that. Would be wonderful. Merritt Linky has
three meetings.
Yes, it's only 3 a year. Merritt has been involved for some years, and then just this last year has kind of had to step off. Just it hasn't worked well, particularly for him with calving season and other things. So the meeting timings aren't great.
He had both knees replaced.
Did that too? Yes.
Yeah, that, you know, that's good. That's always good.
But yeah, I can get you more information on that. So thank you. So just for reference, so within the rural consortium, all of the employees and the administration of the rural parts of the state, we're all state employees. We work for the Labor Department. As I said, I've got 10 counties, 8 offices, and about 25 staff. It's a little unusual for state employees to be running these things in counties in Colorado in lieu of county employees. That determination was made a long time ago. It really has to do with the funding that comes to an individual county is so minuscule that it would be difficult for Broward County, for example, to stand up their own workforce program. So the state has basically run it on behalf of rural counties for decades at this point. But we are all underneath the umbrella of the state's Labor Department. And the main focus of the workforce system is to ensure that job seekers have access to meaningful employment. The way that we define meaningful is, you know, hopefully being at a self-sufficiency level, which I do want to talk about what that looks like for Route. And then also ensuring that businesses can attract the talent that they need in order to function within their local area. So those are our two main kind of objectives for the workforce system. The services that are provided inside of the workforce center, job search, helping people get ready for jobs, resume writing. We do assessments for employers, also if individuals come in and they might not know, you know, what they're good at or what they're interested in, et cetera. We do have training and intensive job coaching available. That has eligibility requirements for it, and so an individual candidate who is interested have to meet eligibility, and then the training program also has to be eligible. So we don't do a lot of those. Our numbers are very small, but that is something else that we provide. And then we provide services to businesses that kind of is like ad hoc HR support, so, you know, helping them write jobs, helping them understand changes to labor law, a lot of HR functionality. So, you know, I have staff that are specifically focused on helping businesses attract and retain talent. So those are kind of the main things that the workforce system does. Like most federal programs, we've had persistent funding cuts. kind of a little bit every year, going back to about really the stimulus package. So when the recession happened, we got a lot of money through ARRA, and then pretty much since that time, it's been sort of this slow dwindling of funds. And so that's really put a lot of focus for us on making sure that we're engaging and leveraging other partners and services, because our resources aren't getting any bigger. And so, you know, we're
hoping to do more with less. Well, at 3% unemployment or 2.5% unemployment, your services were going to be definitely
absolutely
than 10% unemployment.
Absolutely, yes.
So, I mean, understandably.
Yep,
so.
That's how it's supposed to work. Yep. So the way that the workforce system is funded in Colorado is probably 70% federal dollars and then 30% state funding. That's called the Employment Support Fund. It's a tack on tax that comes through the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. And so we do receive some state funding, which helps considerably. There's a few bills, I think, potentially in the pipeline this year to consider trying to increase the employment support funding that comes to the system. I know that's something that the state's labor department is interested in. The federal funding is where we've kind of seen that steady cut. The federal funding is a formula allocation, and so just like you said, when unemployment goes down and we split the pie amongst all 50 states, our piece of the pie gets smaller relative to the whole, right? That's how the formula is supposed to work. Colorado, as you pointed out, has had very low unemployment. We were the last into the recession and amongst the first states out of it. And even though U.S. unemployment is low, our state unemployment has been persistently lower, and then in this neck of the woods in these northwest counties, even lower than the state. And so all that has meant, you know, we really have to camp out on our vacancy savings and do what we can. So, and then this is just specific, you know, just so you have a sense of numbers. That pie chart on the left side is how many people were served through our Steamboat office over the course of this last year. So this was through 2019. And then on the right-hand side is showing the number of businesses across the five-county region, because we don't break those out distinctly for the office, although we do have, you know, the addresses of all the businesses. For reference, on the job seeker side of things, this is about a quarter of what our volume was in 2011, 2012. So, you know, it's slow, very slow. Most people right now who can breathe are working or can find a job. The problem is that those jobs are not enough to sustain somebody, which is what I want to talk a little bit more about in the data. So you can just have a sense of what the impact, though, is of the Workforce Center Services and the benefit. What this is showing you is on the far left-hand side, it's showing you what the annualized version of the earnings would have been for somebody who seeks Workforce Center Services. That's like the bottom of the triangles when they come into our office. And then this is showing you multiple quarters after they've received Workforce Services where their wages go. And so this is consistent across the state. We're not an outlier. But we do see kind of an immediate impact on wages after somebody seeks Workforce Center Services that persists for quite some time. So that's all the way out to 16 quarters after they've received Workforce Center Services. We continue to see an increase in wage progression. And this is the training program that I spoke about. As I mentioned, we don't have a lot of funding for that, and so slots are pretty limited. But what's in yellow is showing you where our performance is in these respective measures. The federal government gives us money to serve what they call dislocated workers, which is people who've been laid off. That's the middle table. We serve youth independently. For us, that's up to the age of 24, 16 to 24. And then our most generic program in terms of eligibility requirements, they just term adult, and that's the one on top. This is showing you for the Northwest region how many people exited that program in our most recent program year. So you can see across our five-county region, you know, we had less than 30 people participate in a training program. But for those that did, their median earnings, their employment entry, and their retention was above the federal performance standards across the board in every one of the programs that we put them through. So those training programs do tend to be really effective, and we have great results with them, but the N is really small just because there's not a lot of money to serve folks.
What is the dislocated?
Somebody who's been laid off. So let go from a job through no fault of their own, the same criteria for receiving unemployment insurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well,
Not a lot of that going on right now.
I understand the table here either, but
yeah.
So I can't imagine there's that many of them right now.
No, so we had four of them last year across the five county area.
Oh, four?
So up there in the blue.
That went through a training program.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me a bit. Yeah.
Yep. Not very many. And that is all that I wanted to talk about with respect to the actual services and operation of workforce, unless you guys have questions. What I really wanted to talk about was kind of what's going on in Route County and what are workforce concerns looking like in the data.
That's great.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, great.
Good.
Are you guys familiar with the Colorado Center on Law and Policy of Self-Sufficiency Index?
I am.
You've maybe seen this table before. They do it every 2 years. We like to use this a lot because it's much more helpful, I think, to look at self-sufficiency at a localized level. Obviously, knowing that the cost of living in Route County is a lot higher than it's going to be in Baca County, you know, different than it's going to be in Boulder County. And so what CCLP does, they work with researchers to put together what they believe is the least possible amount of money somebody could spend in these categories within that particular county and still be able to get by. And then they break it out by household composition, which is, I know you guys know really well, the cost of childcare is a huge driver here. So you see really wide variation in expenditures based off of who's in your family or what your household looks like. They do this every year. So this was for 2018. They'll do it again in 2020. It's a really helpful supplement for us when we think about what kind of a job or what kind of wages does somebody actually need. If we're talking about meaningful employment or a good job, you can't talk about that without talking about local cost of living. So we use this to be kind of a helpful baseline. I will say my own take on this is that it is low. I think most people who have seen this go like, I'd love to find that house or that apartment.
And the idea that your housing cost would stay the same as the number of people
in your family goes
up.
They max out at a two-bedroom rental. Is what that, so once you
I don't know what a school-age kid and teenager are going to be in the
sharing
same
a bedroom. Yes. The other thing that's really low on here is health care. It's assuming employer-provided health care, and that would be your out-of-pocket contribution as an employee. So if you're buying your own health insurance on the exchange, obviously that cost could easily be 4 to 5 times what you're seeing there. So there's some assumptions here that put this figure, I think, low, but basically what it gives you on the bottom there is what your hourly wage would need to be in order to meet self-sufficiency or basically not have to utilize any government services or programs. So, you know, no SNAP, no TANF, no Section 8, no CCAP, right? If you were going to make your own ends meet through income alone, that's what you would need to earn per hour, assuming a 40-hour work week. So at the low level there for a single adult, they put self-sufficiency in Route County at $13.56 an hour. And at the high water mark there for an adult with an infant and a preschooler owing largely the child care costs all the way up to almost $43 an hour would be self-sufficiency. Again, the assumptions, I think, put that figure pretty low, but it is done within our, you know, within Route County specifically, looking at the cost of rentals and housing and how much does child care cost here, which is nice that they do that at a county level. So this is kind of what we work off of when we connect with job seekers and also talk with businesses about what constitutes a good job, right? Is looking at compensation relative to how expensive is it to live in Brown County. Any questions on this one?
It's interesting, the last three columns, how they split that up on the hourly wage per adult.
Yeah. Assuming both adults are working full-time.
Full-time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little staggering.
Yahoo!
I mean, not that this is what you came to talk about, but it just would be interesting because people say, like, oh, well, I can't afford to work because of childcare.
Right.
It would be interesting to compare that hourly wage to the monthly cost of childcare.
Yeah.
It's probably getting pretty close.
Yeah, I would think so. So again, this is not showing what people are making. It's what people would need to make, right? So
yeah.
Now I want to talk about what people are actually making and what does that look like. But I think that this is sort of a good foundation place to start for when we talk about what wages actually look like in Route County. So real quickly on the demographics, you know, the total population for the county, the total regional employment, so that's how many people are working inside of Route County, a little over 17,000. Median household income, I just want to be really clear here that income includes dividends, interest, and rent. It's not wages alone, so it's wages plus. When we talk about wages by themselves, you'll see people who earn their money just through going to work quite a bit lower. Income is quite a bit higher because largely because of interest and dividend payments that, you know, higher income people are able to invest and receive those.
So you actually think that there's 17,000
people? Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Working?
Yes.
Wow.
In Route County?
In Route County.
That seems like, wow.
But isn't 26 the total population, including children?
Yes.
And old people?
And everyone. So, what? Yes. Yeah, so or the labor force participation rate, which we'll talk about, and is crazy high. But yes, that is the, that's
okay,
the
well,
that's the number actually.
We don't want to shoot the messenger, but mm-hmm, wow, okay, that yep. seems like really high.
Does seem really high. Everybody's got a job. You should make sure
we
your
do
kids
that.
Actually
everybody does have a job.
Yeah. Well, and some keep in mind this regional yeah. employment.
That's true.
That's potentially one person who's working two or three jobs because right. this is counting jobs.
Okay, so that
right?
could be. I
right.
could, I'll follow that.
Yes. Okay. So the 17,000 is the total number of
jobs
being worked,
yep.
so to speak. Right.
Okay.
So that's kind of, this is sort of the, you know, the takeaways are listed there, but we'll go into the data on that a little bit more here in just a second. This is on the business side of things. So the circle is showing you businesses that are located in Route County, how big are they? So you can see the majority, overwhelmingly, of almost 40% of the businesses that are registered in Route County only employ 1 to 4 people. We only have one employer who employs more than 500 people. I think we all know who that is. So predominantly speaking, most of our businesses have 50 or fewer employees, the overwhelming majority of Route County. This number on the bottom is showing you how many companies total employ people who live here. So that might mean, you know, my next door neighbor works for
actually,
a company in D.C., but he works
employee
here.
Employee has, is that Ski Corps?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So where is the hospital?
I believe that the hospital is in the 250 category.
And so that would just be, I don't know, I mean, that would just be their local, because
they have a lot of contractors, right? So it's just,
health.
Yes, yeah, it's
one
their local employees.
Okay, yeah. But only employees.
Yeah, the
and
doctors
and the doctors are not employees.
Yep. Okay. And then a lot of companies that are not registered businesses in Route County have employees in Route County, right? Right. So this is looking at the labor force in Route County. So as we said before, so that total population, 26,000. The total working age population in Route County, and for our purposes here, working age is 15 and up, okay, is 22,312. So we have a pretty small number of under 15-year-olds in the county relative to the total population.
When you consider people who are retirement age also working age?
So I don't, but the federal government does. So when we talk about
they just want us to work till we die.
Every but 15, if you're 16 and older, they think you should be working. So this came up.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Casey's pod.
Yeah. Well, and in this community, almost everybody is. So labor force participation really does look at literally everyone age 16 and older who is working and who is not. This came up during the last election when people were saying unemployment is 40%. They were talking about labor force participation, right? So they were saying only 60% of people are in the labor force and 40% aren't, right, which is not the definition of unemployment, but that's where that misnomer came from. So when the federal government calculates labor force participation, they do look at 16 and over who's working. In Route County, labor force participation rate is almost 79%. That is very, very high. In Colorado, it's 10% below that. It's 69%. And in the nation, it's at 63%. Now, labor force participation, not here, but in the United States and in Colorado, when you just look at that level, is in a trough. We peaked about 2000, 2001 as a nation in terms of labor force participation rate, almost hit 70% in the United States. And it's been dropping ever since, and it really has not come back, even after the recession, even with this record low unemployment. What this means, though, for Route County specifically, we talk about kind of the balance here of labor force participation is how much slack, so to speak, is in your labor market. So when you have really low unemployment, we've got tons of businesses with help wanted signs, they can't find people. Well, if only half the county was working, that's a lot of potential workers out there that if you could find the right combinations of schedule and pay and interest, you might be able to attract somebody to come work for you. We don't have much slack in our labor market, because 79% of everybody over the age of 16 who lives in this county already has at least one job, if not more. And that includes the disabled, it includes stay-at-home parents, it includes the elderly, it includes everyone, right? So that's a really high labor force participation rate. You tend to see this, you know, I also have Eagle County, Pitkin County, Garfield County, Lake County, Summit County. You tend to see this higher labor force participation rate in high cost of living areas, which is just logical, right? Most people need to work to be able to live where they're living. Any questions on this one?
No.
Okay.
it kind of shoots a hole in the concept. Well, people don't know how to work anymore, so I don't know.
It's a everybody's already working.
Everybody's already
working. I mean, it doesn't say that they're good at working.
No,
that's true.
Right.
That's true.
Yep.
Yep. They're going.
They're showing up, theoretically.
The two on the left are just kind of some interesting demographic trends. The number of millennials here, and millennial right now, it would be up to the age of 38, so I'm a millennial.
I'm too.
Yep. We're getting older by the minute.
Dan is not.
Yeah. He doesn't look too sad about it. And then looking at the number of people who are retiring soon, who are residents of Routt County, this is really significant. So, and again, this is coming up upon retirement age, so getting close to 65, right? So they're going to be 65 inside of the next 5 years, is a really significant chunk of our population. Almost 8,000 Routt County residents are getting up to that Medicare eligibility where
so
they can consider retiring.
That's 5 years to?
Inside of the next 5 years, yep.
That's this. That much is the information we got from the state demographer
yeah.
when we were talking about the master plan.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So I put that one on here along with our really low unemployment. So Routt County's unemployment rate was just under 2% in the most recent month that we have it for, which would be November. The job growth projection for the county is another 2,000 jobs by 2024, and so inside of the next 4 years, adding another 2,000 jobs. Right now, we have about 4,000 workers that are being imported who are not county residents to meet the workforce needs. And we're not meeting our labor demands, right? At unemployment at 1.9%, we don't have enough people for all the jobs available. We're going to add 2,000 jobs in the next 4 years, and we have 8,000 people who are coming up on retirement age inside of the next 5 years. That is a little bit of a labor crisis. That is not super dissimilar from other resort-based communities. So, you know, Routt County is not alone in that, but this is definitely something to be paying a fair amount of attention to. The good news about the retirement is that usually those people are occupying higher wage jobs that when they vacate, it gives an opportunity for somebody else to move into, which is a positive thing. But that's a really high number of potential retirees who are looking at stepping out of an already very undersupplied labor force. So to speak.
Start bussing them in.
This is, to me, this is kind of like the most important graph that I have as it relates to workforce development. So, and I, before I explain how it works real quickly, traditional workforce development in the United States kind of goes with this idea of if you train or invest in workers and you upskill them, there's a job on the other side of that that pays them more money. This graph proves that that model doesn't work here. Because what this is showing you is the jobs in Routt County, the blue bar, is jobs at a required educational level. So on the top, you can see that a little about 25% of Routt County jobs require no education whatsoever. About 45% of Routt County jobs require high school diploma or GED only. And then the gray bar is showing you what percentage of our population is actually at that educational level. So you can see here in Routt County, only about 20%, 22% of jobs require a bachelor's degree, but we've got 34% of the people who live here have a bachelor's degree, right? Conversely, you know, we've got 45% of jobs you don't even need to have more than a high school diploma, but less than 20%.
Bottom line there. So.
We're overeducated.
We are way overeducated for the jobs that exist here.
Which
right?
We all do that. Yeah,
yep.
We all know that.
Yep. So, and this is pretty much any service sector dominated economy. Not any, but in desirable locations where, you know, recreation heavy, right? So this is the same, more or less, that you're going to see for Eagle County, Summit County, Pickens County looks very similar. Moffat County looks quite a bit different, interestingly. And as you know, we import a fair amount of their residents to come to work here. So they're helping fill some of that gap, right? Because they have their county educational attainment level is lower overall, so it's advantageous for Routt to be able to pull those folks across the county line to come work all those jobs that don't require you to have a college degree, right? But this is a little bit tricky in terms of thinking about how you get people, you know, go back to that self-sufficiency standard, how do we get people at progressive wages or at higher incomes that enable them to be self-sufficient here, right? Education is not the way to do it. for us because no, we're already overeducated. Right?
Get that.
Yeah. So, and this I think just poses some really interesting questions in thinking about when we talk about the cost of housing, the cost of childcare, and everything else. We want people to be able to afford those things, to be able to stay here and raise families here. Giving them more training isn't going to help them. So what we really need to do is put more of an emphasis on businesses and what types of jobs we're trying to attract to the community, and or thinking about how we value service sector jobs and what should they compensate. Here is, this is showing you the largest occupations in the county by number of FTE. I doubt, you know, anything too new or surprising here.
And then these are the jobs.
These are the jobs.
And then you could be working in one or three of these.
You very well could. Yes, these are just a number of jobs. Could. Exactly.
Yeah. And what's the gray bar?
The gray bar is the national average. So what you would expect to see just based off of the U.S. as a whole in a similar size population.
Huh.
So we have, as all resort economies do, a lot more than our fair share of retail sales, food prep, that kind of thing. These are the projected growth occupations. So you'll see that it's largely the same as our dominant occupations are also the ones that are projected to grow. These are the same, this is the same data set that's looking at adding those 2,000 jobs by 2024. So this is the number of these positions that are projected to be added to Routes economy inside of the next 4 years. The majority of them have to do with food prep, sales, personal care, which would be, you know, like a manicurist or a hairstylist or that type of thing. And then the healthcare support is like home healthcare aides or CNAs, those types of positions.
Installation, construction.
Mm-hmm. And then these are showing you the occupations in Routes County by the median wage for that particular occupation. And this is broken down at an hourly level, just because that self-sufficiency standard was also at the hourly level. So if you remember, for one adult, a single adult, that self-sufficiency standard was about $13.50 an hour in 2018, all the way up to 42-something an hour for an adult with an infant and a preschooler. And this, there are occupations, they wouldn't all fit on this slide. There are occupations that do have median wages at that $40, $42 an hour range. Unfortunately, there's so few of them that they don't show up here when we look at kind of our greatest hits list in terms of how many of those jobs we actually have. And so what is often the case in resort communities is that when you look at the graph that shows you your largest occupations, if you turn it upside down, that's the graph for the highest median wages, right? So the jobs that pay the most, we have very, very least of, and the jobs that pay the least, we have the most of. One of the exceptions here, and we're going to switch this for and go from occupation to looking at industry, and government as an industry is our largest employer in Routes County, and that is one of the only ones that actually gets somewhere closer to what the state demographer in DOLA would put as like a middle wage category for the county. So I have the experience often of talking to the county commissioners who are very surprised to see how high that government number is. It seems like you guys are not surprised. That's good. It includes your school districts, which is often the most significant driver here. It would not include Colorado Mountain College, but it does include the three school districts in Cedar Route County.
UCL.
And it includes the, yes, yep, now that they're part of the UC system.
Includes what again?
The hospital. Oh. The employees of the hospital.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or government?
The UC system is part of the state, right? Yeah.
The state college.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then, you know, not surprisingly, underneath that, accommodation, food service, retail, trade, arts, entertainment, recreation is where ski industry lives. That's the industry classification for ski companies is there. Construction, social assistance, and so on down the line. Again, there are other industries on this list that have fewer than like that 400 FTE mark, but just for clarity of fitting all this on here, I cut it off beneath oil and gas extraction. Any questions on any of that? Okay. So again, your top industry is based off of FTE, and then these are the industries that pay the highest median wages. So you'll note here, you know, so utilities, finance, management of companies, none of those are amongst our largest employers, so they're not on this list, right? That's what I was saying, if you kind of flip it upside down. So they don't have a tremendous number of employees, but you can see that they're the median wages inside of Route County for these specific industries. You know, there are employers that have median wages above that six-figure mark, not too terribly many of them. And then on down the line, and then when you look at the annualized version of the hourly wage for accommodation and food service, you can see that the median wages is, you know, around $30,000 a year, just under $30,000 a year in those industries that we are the most flush with. So I imagine, again, nothing too new or surprising.
And meanwhile, housing costs are up.
Yep, keep going up. So that's it with all of the bar charts for your first day back.
That was an
after
eyeful.
Break.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So just a couple of takeaways from all of those graphs and charts. Obviously, unemployment is really low. It continues to be persistently low. The thing that we are not seeing nationally or really in our local area is upward pressure on wages. That seems to be something that's befuddling a lot of economists. There was a little bit of an uptick in wages had increased after the tax package that passed a couple years ago. We've actually seen those increases go away. So the income has gone down by about 3% on average over the course of the last year. So whatever little gain we saw from that tax cut has now been nibbled away at.
Just short term.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it was very short term. For Route County, the median hourly earnings in Route County is just under $21 an hour. We have experiences of high underemployment, like a lot of resort-driven communities. That large number of pending retirees, how many workers we're already having to import, largely from Moffitt County, to meet our labor demands, and then our supply is very low as it stands now.
Underemployment means they're not making enough money,
it
right?
It doesn't
not
necessarily.
That they're not working full-time?
No, so it doesn't necessarily. Yeah, okay. So in this context, underemployment would mean that they're not at their maximum earning potential for the skill set that they bring to the table. Okay. So, you know, it could be somebody who has a master's degree who's a lifty, right?
Okay.
Like, we would file that underneath this broad bucket of underemployment.
Okay.
It can also mean not working as many hours as you want as well. Like, if you want to work full-time but you can only find part-time or seasonal work, that would also be underemployment. Yeah, good question. So the Workforce Center in Steamboat and across the region, we see really great outcomes in terms of the impact on people's wages and wage progression over time when we see them, but our volume is really low. We're not serving a lot of folks right now because everybody's working a few not so great jobs. And then, again, any increase in wages for this community is really going to depend on attracting higher-paying industry or occupations to the area, not through training and upskilling of our existing residents, because we don't suffer from that underskilled. That's not why people are poorly compensated here, isn't for lack of education or skill. And then just a couple other things. So one of in dissolving the boards, I have a staff person who works with businesses predominantly who sits on the Economic Development Council, Christina Oxley. She's also helping to head up the Yampa Valley Talent Professional Group. So that's a group of HR folks in the community who meet on a regular basis. We offer business education events periodically. We market those predominantly through the Chamber, who's been a really lovely partner for us in trying to engage with businesses. The next one is this Friday. It's an update on all of the state legislative changes that happened last session that have an impact on employers as it relates to hiring and compensation. There were quite a few of them. The Equal Pay Act was a big one. There's a lot in there that has some really meaningful stuff for businesses. So we have a labor attorney from Junction coming up on Friday to do a presentation on that. I think we expect probably about 60 or 70 people to come. And then we are starting, this will be our first year of doing an annual summit on workforce-related topics for the 10-county region. That's going to be on April 2nd in Silverthorne at the Pavilions. Anyone, you would all be more than welcome to attend. We're going to be talking about how do you attract and retain a workforce in this particular economic climate. So just some things that are coming down the pike. So that is all that I have, unless you guys have any more questions or anything else I can do.
No, it was an airful. You know, one thing you talked about the education levels and the rest and the high education, and we've been working on and struggling, and especially trained, skilled workforce, mm-hmm. like welders and
right, yes, skilled trains. Yep.
You know, so I don't said that right, but anyhow, so you didn't mention any of that. I mean, we've talked about that in the past,
yeah,
a bunch of times.
I think that's a great area of opportunity because that. So those industries don't tend to employ a ton of people here, but they do tend to be pretty good jobs, and there's career ladders attached to them. We don't have a lot of, I mean, I think, you know, what Hayden has done is great, but it's a feeder to 20 mile and that, you know, the direction that that is heading. And so that's not really a great long-term game. But I do think that developing out CTE programs or skilled trade programs makes a tremendous amount of sense. It gives, you know, so I think, and I don't know about the other districts, but I know for RE2, I think it's something like 27% of the kids who graduate don't go on to post-secondary in the next year. I don't think that they have data beyond that. So a quarter or more of the kids out of Steamboat School District aren't going on to college in the next year, but a high school diploma alone can get you a pretty lousy job in Steamboat Springs, but it's not going to sustain you over time, right? And so helping to have kids develop a skill set that they can acquire without going into significant debt by signing up for a four-year degree that there isn't a ton of demand or use for, I think is a really important strategy and very under-leveraged, for sure. And a lot of that, candidly, I mean, I think Colorado is not exactly a union-friendly state. Most of the places or the entities that are doing that type of training are embedded inside of a union. So like down in Pueblo, for example, they have a tremendous amount of skilled trade programs, and they're really excellent, and they put people through four-year apprenticeship programs, you know, where they come out on the other side of it with no debt,
plumbers,
making $90,000 a year.
Exactly. All that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're, you know, that... that vocational part of the economy really got hollowed out like in the 80s and 90s, and it needs to come back, but there's a lot of stigma
well,
to
the
it,
recession
and it's expensive.
Didn't help that area either.
No.
Yeah. They got hit hard,
yep.
too.
Yep.
And found a new job, new life.
Yes. Yep. You're exactly right.
No, you did good.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Is it possible, just thinking we're working on our master plan, at least some of the outreach around that, and, you know, we've got a survey out right now. One of the questions is the top five weaknesses mm-hmm. of the county, and the third one so far of the 450-some-odd responses we've had is job opportunities.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, is it possible to maybe either post slides on our master plan?
Oh, absolutely.
Information?
Yes.
I'm thinking we're also wanting to have a presentation possibly to our planning commission.
Sure.
Likely going to do some of the elements on that
yeah.
document.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe some other strategies around how we get some of that data around jobs and opportunities
right.
into a land use document, which I think is sort of a weird thing maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously we want to figure out how to have an affordable and, you know, a place that people can
right.
live, can
right.
have fulfilling jobs,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe a way to put you in front of them.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled to. And, you know, any of, I mean, all of this is yours, but if the data in this format, or if there's something else that you'd like to see, just let me know. We do have access to a tremendous amount of data, and
right.
we can put it together in lots of different ways. So,
yeah,
just let me know how I can be helpful, but I'd be more than happy to.
Okay. Yeah, I think the data piece is helpful for sure. I mean, just in terms of that document, just
mm-hmm.
trying to put demographics together and see
right, right,
the trends of employment and, you know, knowing that it's a high priority issue for the community.
Yep, yep. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank
we'll
you.
Next
Thank
year.
You.
Or anytime you'd like.
All right. So we are here for consideration of a signature on the 2020 Buell Foundation grant for the Fatherhood Program. Do you want to just give us some background and let us know how things are going with the program?
This is the Fatherhood Program in general?
Yeah. I don't see why not. You're here.
Oh.
Yep. That's good.
We love to hear how it's going.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Things have been going good. It's been a good year. One big change, or I guess something that's been nice this year, in addition to the Buell and Buell funds, we got that sizable grant from CDHS, the two-generation grant. So that's kind of had me shift my focus in the past year and a half to be directed towards the parents of preschoolers, and also kind of do a more invested effort on the individuals who are incarcerated at Rouse County Jail. So in regards to the individuals who are at Rapid County Jail, in addition to doing the parenting curriculum I have, we're doing basically reentry prep. So he's like, all right, like, because, you know, the guys are, you can only go for a max 2 years in that facility. So it's like, well, you're going to get out, let's plan for when you get out in terms of what do things look like for housing, and what do things look like for food assistance, what do things look like for your family, for just like other supports, for work, and just basically creating that, what are you doing like day one, week one, month one, and then offering that continued support when they get out. And that's been pretty neat to do, and that's been in conjunction with Rot to Work. They've kind of helped me put together the curriculum for that, or kind of like the path for that. So that's been pretty neat. I've got to work with a couple guys using that curriculum. And in regards to working with the preschoolers, or the parents of preschools, I'm sorry, we did a couple workshop series with folks over at Grandkids, or the parents, I guess, who have, like, they work at the hospital, but their kids are the Grandkids child care facility, as well as we did another workshop series with Heritage Park Preschool and the Montessori Preschool, to basically, you know, build the skills of the parents, build that community, but also it helps the facilities themselves, because they're providing parenting education. It enables them to get like a higher status in terms of like the Colorado Shines and these different rating systems that these facilities use to kind of improve the efficacy, but they can also kind of broadcast that out to the marketplace and say like, hey, here's what we can do for you and your children. So it's been good. So it's been my focus, but yeah, still doing the annual summer program. I do an 8-week class to guys, and I'll kind of get things going for that. And that went well. I did it in the Hot Springs this past year, and had guys actually who were in town, people from like Moffitt who worked here, because it was like on the bus route in the middle of town, and the facility was great. We had a really good diverse group, and I'll probably go there again, because it was just a great group. So.
That's the new dad workshop, or that's the
one? So this is that's called the Nurturing Fathers program. So it's more like a kind of general program that kind of talks about emotions and like how you were raised and how that kind of shapes how you parent your child, and it just kind of creates community amongst dads and what have you. So, but I'm doing the boot camp for new dads as well, and I have been doing that with the hospital, but not doing that any longer. I'm doing it basically out of the cabin, and I'm kind of looking for a new partnering program to do it with right now. And I have one potential group that they're, I don't know, in early talks, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, things are humming along.
So you have in here your the budget for the program.
Yes.
So the $33,866 is
yes.
The budget, and then. Yeah. So when you use the hot springs, is that included in here? The rent, whatever that
is? So the cost associated with that program is largely tied to food and child care. They give us a facility for free, which is awesome because it's a really nice facility. So basically, it's like $30 a session, I think we pay. So it's like 8 sessions, $30 a session for the child care. And then the meals is kind of varies depending on where we go, but that's the cost, really. And then, like, materials, like, I'll buy books and what have you. The same goes for the work in the jails. I'll buy books and what have you. But yeah, I'd say that class, that summer class, is the most cost-intensive because every class has the child care and the food cost with it. But overall, the program costs are probably, they're lower this year than they have been, because I'm going down to 20 hours because I'm going to start my master's in social work in like a week and a half. So I'll be going to school and doing this work.
You'll be busy.
Watching my kiddos. So that's the plan for the next couple of years. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that's great. Good.
So yeah, I think last year my budget was like over 40, but yeah.
So again, I guess, so, I mean, you said some little bit about your numbers. So how many people have you worked with?
In total, like, year over year, or
this last year, or whatever.
This last year, I think we worked with a total of 120 parents.
Well, that's good.
And that varies from, I mean, I do these like longer form classes, like that's going to be like 8 people, you know, it actually can like stick throughout, but I also do events just to get, like part of my mission is also just get to build a community of fathers, so we'll do like a bowling night or do like, hey, let's go get coffee and kind of get together, just kind of guys to like know each other and talk to each other and to, because I mean, I find it's a pretty
good network.
Yeah, just because there's a lot of folks that moved up here in the last 3, 4, 5 years and have kind of struggled to, especially when they have young children, it's hard to kind of get out and build that up. So that's part of what we do as well. And we also help put on the, we're also on the planning committee for the Parent Connection Summit, which was a pretty big deal. We had 180 parents come out.
Wow.
For that, and that was a cool deal. Put on like those, a lot of the Rock County Youth Services Coalition was the one that was the group that kind of spearheaded that. It was basically a day long event where there was workshops and parents can engage. Basically, parents are an organization, contacts and counselors and therapists, and just a lot of parents are kind of spend time with one another and realize that they're not the only one going through what they're going through. So,
have you connected with Carrie, the public health director, about how some of this might fit with her? I'm just thinking one of the goals she identified was around community connectedness, and that seems like it would be something that would contribute to the work on that goal.
Yeah, Carrie and I know each other. I haven't leveraged that relationship well.
Well, it's new.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But the public health improvement plan we reviewed yesterday included that as a goal. So just something.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'll
consider as a.
Yeah. No, thank you for that.
Because the other part of her goal is kind of streamlining and coordinating all these different services that happen within our community.
Sure.
So. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize the chair to electronically sign the Buell Foundation grant application on behalf of the Fatherhood Program in Rock County.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good.
It is actually physical.
Oh, you actually have a hard copy to sign?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
That'll work.
And it's written out as Timothy Kurgan, but if you want, you can write it out and sign it.
We had a little. It's a little.
We're good.
It's all right.
Okay, and that's just because that's he had signed it last year, so that's kind of how I left it. But it's fine. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Totally.
Getting the Ballin show this morning. That's a.
There you go.
It's a treat for you guys, I guess. I don't know.
That's much treat for you guys. Whatever. So we're all good to see you
it's
guys.
It's part of the deal.
Very good.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hooray.
Have a good new year.
Keep things going. I appreciate it very much. And I'll.
Oh, so
we, oh, we need I have to do AP.
Yeah, I have the AP here. So.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much.
You're good. Thank you, guys.
All right. So we'll go ahead and approve accounts payable.
So, Madam Chair, I move that we approve the accounts payable. That would be the regular checks of cycle date 1230 through 13. And that would be in the amount of $1,140,429.92. The payroll warrants, as well as the payroll withholding payments and the rest, $850,232.83. The total warrants approved would be $1,990,662.75. Noting the county manager has reviewed and approved such.
Second. Tom, do you have some items of note for us?
Yeah, to bring your attention. Again, we had some of these payments were from the 2019 budget, and now that we're actually into the year 2020, out of the 2020 budget expenditures. 2020 budget expenditures are pretty minor, all these, but one of my report here from 2019. Payment to JDW Inc. YBRA, this is for replacement of the air conditioning unit. This is the first half of the contract, $10,837.50. Payment to Kensco LLC. This is the sheriff's office, and this is the purchase of detention officer uniforms, $1,723.25. Payment to Northwest Data Services. This was from YVRA, and Kevin spoke to you a little bit about this yesterday. But this is the surveillance system project and network upgrades at the airport, the network upgrades, including activities with the FBO, $27,128.35. Payment to True North Steel, this is Roden Bridge, for the purchase of culverts, $49,285.21. Payment to Wagner Equipment Company, this is YVRA AIP 45, and this is the progress payment, application number one for the build of a front-end loader. This is progress payment number one, $347,798.57. Payment to John Colin McCauley. This is from Facilities Management. This is the Justice Center solar power system repair project. And this is the payment to order parts and materials, $10,211.82. And finally, a payment to Calcon Constructors, Inc. This is for the Sheriff's Office, but these were for the separate site improvements that were separate from the CLAP project. This is payout number four, $10,324.00. Any questions on any other items?
No questions for me? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, so we are here to consider approval of an award for the demolition of the old communication center.
Yes, we are here to request the Board of County Commissioners approve the award for RFQ Old Communication Center Demo to Tyke Pierce Construction LLC for $25,355 and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order. This is a budgeted expense, and we sent out the RFQ to 9 vendors for the facilities manager. We received 4 quotes back, and Tyke Pierce was the lowest and most comprehensive.
Yeah, he was. It was a complete response.
So after reviewing the quotes, we've requested that Board of County Commissioners approve this award.
Did we have any idea how much it was going to be before we got the quotes back? I mean, did you guys have a guess?
We were going out thinking it was going to be just under 20 because we had removed the structural walls.
Right, yep.
But that's not exactly what happened, which is why we did the RFQ process rather than the RFP. But
I'm good. I'm just curious. That's kind of the way it is right now. Everybody's
yeah, when you busy. Look at, you know, I mean, the quotes go from 25,000 to 38,000, so we were just a little bit off with 25,000.
And so then I remember that we changed some of the timeline on the design.
Engineering.
The engineering.
We're waiting for the engineering. They're going to do the final drawings after the demos in case we find any surprises.
Okay.
And it made sense to not have them go ahead and do a complete.
Right. Okay.
So then I guess the follow up her question. So where are we at? So are you scheduled to send out the RFP for it then, or
for design?
For design.
That
was,
we've already been awarded. That was awarded in November, and now we're doing the demo, and then the next RFP will be the construction.
So they just don't have to return the drawings.
We're looking to get those mid February.
4 drawings.
Yeah.
Well, so this demo won't start until the first week in February. So, you know, take some a week or two, and then we can get the design team in there to, you know, get going on. They've already started schematic design, so we've had a couple meetings with County Coroner and Emergency Management about space needs. So we kind of have a concept floor plan in place now.
Get done with the demolition, and then we should be able to finalize up the schematic.
Yeah, we'll get the schematic finalized. We'll sit down for review for that, and then we'll go for construction documents and go out for contractor fixed pricing on the project. So I think it did get pushed, but I still think we can get this thing done by the end of the year.
And the reason the demo, the start of the demo, is pending completion of the documents project?
Yes.
Documents recording project that the clerk's office is doing?
Oh, yeah, because they're out there.
They're out there doing.
They have
they're using that space.
Amazing setup.
Yeah. Apparently, their machine makes quite a bit of noise, and it was nice
to
have.
They have four compressors that are this tall out there, and they make a lot of noise, these air compressors.
So, to do recording?
Well, so they
they're
have these tables.
All the documents.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so they have these glass tables where you pick up the glass and you put your document on it. You close the glass, and then there's a bunch of air holes in the table, and it sucks the document down tight onto this table.
Yep.
Like say it's a book, open book, it sucks it down tight, and there's a camera up above it that takes a picture of it. And so they sit there all day long, and you know, they turn the page.
Just like
the glass,
a really fancy copy machine.
Take the picture, turn the page. I was out there a few days ago, six people in there.
Well, it's a good thing we had that place for them available.
Exactly.
Yeah, it worked out really well because they can't bother anybody.
So they're actually in the space that's going to be demoed.
Correct.
They're in the space. They were in the elections office. It was creating because he had phase one of the project in the fall, and it was creating some inconvenience for treasurer and other people.
So. Wasn't conducive to the work environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Sounds
yeah.
Like it.
All right. Ready?
Great. Go for it.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the award for the RFQ for the Old Communications Center demolition to Tyke Pierce Construction, LLC for $25,355 and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Come on up.
We're going to the weeds. We're getting in the weeds.
Pun intended.
Pun intended. Yes, indeed.
All right, so we are considering an update to Rout County's weed management plan noxious weed list. So tell us about these lovely weeds.
Do you want to do it?
Go for it, Greg. I'll take notes.
Okay.
Show me how it's done.
For a number of years, we've seen an increase specifically in curly dock, which is not on the state weed list. But the state weed law gives counties discretion as to whether or not they want to add weeds not on the list to their specific county weed plans. And we have been sending letters out now for 2 years when we see curly dock because we kind of want to get it under some control. I think we've done a pretty good job in some areas, but it continues to show up. It's a very trashy weed. It has a high degree of seed viability. It produces a lot of seed. It develops a really substantial taproot, so the plants are really durable, and I just think it's a weed that we want to get on targeted, do a better job of targeting for us in the right-of-ways and for county residents. Common mullein is on the list. It's on the list C in Colorado Department of Agriculture noxious weeds, and we have been targeting that plant in right-of-ways for a number of years. We have certain areas in the county like the lower regions of County Road 52. As you head up towards Wolf Mountain, it's really bad along the creek in there, and we have specifically been contacted by homeowners in there about what to do about it. We have it largely under control in the right-of-way through there, but it's still really bad down along the creek. And it shows up in
primarily, I'd say it shows up primarily in cut banks, but also in fill slopes along county roads throughout the county. And we have specific chemicals that we have had some success with in treating it. And I think we've been handing out our 13 noxious weeds of Rob County for a number of years. I decided to redo it as a more comprehensive weed guide. By adding these two new weeds, we would go to 15, and the 13 noxious weeds guide would no longer be cover the number of weeds that we're targeting specifically in Rob County. So those two things coming together at the same time. We also have bulbous bluegrass, which is a weed that's showing up more and more frequently around the county. It's especially bad down in the dryland hay areas around Catamount. And hay that's gone out from Catamount, we've seen the weed show up in areas where that hay's been fed. So there's no good protocol. I've talked to other weed managers around the state. I've done some research online, talked to chemical providers, and nobody really has a good way of treating that weed right now, but we would like to know where it's showing up. And so we want to be targeting that weed to get an idea of how severe the contamination is in the county and track it as it's going to increase. There's little doubt about that. It depends a little bit upon what the weather conditions are. I think a number of good wet years where we have good early season growth in the perennial, in the desirable perennials, is probably going to help limit its spread. But wherever you have bare ground and that plant in proximity, it's going to have a tendency to increase. Because it's a grass, it's a short-lived perennial grass with a shallow root system, but it can easily spread into areas where you have bare ground, and that includes bare ground even developed simply because of rodent activity. So it's a weed that we want to get on our list so that people become more and more aware of it. So we're just asking the commissioners to approve the change in the county weed plan to add common mullein curly dock and as designated noxious weeds of Rob County, and to have bulbous bluegrass noted as a weed of concern.
And that would mean that the curly dock and common mullein would fall within sort of our enforcement mm-hmm. and ladders, but the bulbous bluegrass, since there's not a really good remedy to get rid of it right now, that doesn't, if we note it on somebody's property, there won't be enforcement.
No, it's mostly for reporting. Yeah. It's for reporting to try to get an understanding of where it is. And I started off with one experimental application on some property up Spring Creek. And we want to follow through, Tiffany will follow through with Todd on some additional experimental applications up there. I think the theory behind the experimental application is sound. The year that the 2018, when we first treated it, we didn't see much influence on it in 2019, and I think it's primarily because when we treated it in 2018, it was so dry that we didn't really have the effectiveness that we were hoping for. And so since then, we've identified a couple of other chemicals we include in kind of a trial up there to see if we can maybe be at least among the counties in Colorado that are coming up with some effective way of countering it.
Sounds straightforward.
Definitely got in the weeds.
Yeah. All right.
So, you know, actually, it would have been good, Greg, I would say, or Tiffany, for your next. It would have been good probably just to have listed in the background information the other 13. And so are we actually going to adopt, like, so we're just adding these two to the 13 to make 15.
Yeah.
and then we're also adding the bulbous bluegrass as a concern.
Yeah, and we haven't, you know, we haven't had weed of concern before. The state calls it their watch list, and they've started adding pretty much new weeds every year to their watch list, and so this would kind of function as our watch list.
Yeah, it's all good. So and the reason why I say that, I mean, for the agenda packet and whatever, which is online and the rest, would end up, you know, if you put the other 13 there, would list the 15. Okay. When any time we get a chance to highlight it and say, hey, remember, you know, and then so I'm fine with what we're doing here, but it just.
Yep. Okay, and we'll add that.
And, you know, in fact, is, you know, the weed plan, what is it, like 5 pages or something like that?
Yeah, well, with the appendix, I think it ends up being about 8, but in that weed plan, I include all of the state noxious weed lists also, as well as some appropriate
recommendation. So I don't know about you, but I don't know, it wouldn't have hurt to have had him
absolutely.
To have put the proposed change in the weed plan and attach it to the packet.
Okay.
You know, is that follow? You understand what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion.
And especially since we have electronically, we don't print it out and everything. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it just would bring up the fact, and well, if we had wanted to see what the hell we did back on whatever date, yeah. on 1/7, we would just bring it back up and look at the proposed change, which we're going to adopt.
Yeah. Okay. And we can note that. We can have two versions electronically on our website with the old list and then the update occurring on this date for the going from the 13 noxious weeds to the Rock County Weed Guide, because that's kind of what we're doing. And I'm just working on getting all the font in agreement on the weed guide right now. So we're pretty close on that, and I think Tiffany and Todd are going to probably work on the actual printing of it. So
that sounds good.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the addition of Curly Dock, which is Rumex crispus, and Common Mullion, which is Verbascum thapus, to the 13 Rock County noxious weed list, and so that would make 15 on the Rock County noxious weed list, and also recognize in the change in the weed plan that the bulbous bluegrass will be classified as a weed of concern.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nizan, if you guys want to introduce yourselves for Deanna and for the record, that would be great.
We'll start down there.
Sure. Yeah. I'm Laura Sard with the Steamboat Springs Chamber.
Sarah Leonard with the Steamboat Springs Chamber.
John Bristol, Economic Development Director at the Chamber.
And you can just give us your dog
right
and
pony
show, John.
Thank you. Kara apologizes for not being here, but she had a. It was what was the class she had?
IOM.
So, invited both Laura and Sarah to join. So I think it's, you know, it's always fun to bring some more chamber crew along. So thank you both for coming. So I wanted to break this up since we've got a half an hour. Break 10 minutes, kind of looking back at this last year, then 10 minutes looking forward on the work plan for this next year, and then maybe just kind of 10 minutes general conversation on other items. So when you open your packet there, updated our economic development kind of workflow here. That's that 10-step to economic development that we have here. I just wanted to give you an updated one, as well as on the back side of it is the vision, mission, and goals for the Economic Development Council for this next year. So those are both updated as well. And again, you've seen this before, but this is just kind of a, you know, the workflow of the Economic Development Department. You know, obviously starting with the investors, paying for our staff time, and including, you know, Sarah and Laura here, and myself, and everybody else at the chamber that supports this, and the administrative effort, and the EDC, and strategic partners, and everything. So, going to the other two items that I have in the packet for you. The first one is the end of year report for 2019, And we'll walk through this for a little bit, and then we can move on and talk about the plan of work for 2020. You've seen this first page before, but I always think that it's helpful. It's a good reminder for folks if you end up sharing this with others or people are looking at it. And this is the exact same report which I give the city as well. So everybody and the chamber. So all three entities that are investors have this. Again, it follows that 10. This follows the 10 steps workflow for economic development, starting with our investors, and staff, and administrative. I want to jump down to the number 4 on page 2, and this is the EDC. Thank you, Commissioner Melton, for serving on the EDC this year. This is a list of where the EDC has been, and we've got new leadership this next year. Megan Moore Kemp will be the chair of the EDC. She works at Yampa Valley Electric. I'm really grateful for her participation there and leadership. Cole Hewitt was the chair of the EDC for the last 2 years. We've already gone ahead and sketched out meeting dates as well as topics for this next year. As well. So,
side note on that,
yes.
Dan and I supposed to present something at the next meeting?
Good question. I haven't sent. So for the first one for January, we wanted to do an update on local government. So we'd love to extend an invitation to you both to provide an update on.
You do the PowerPoint. I'll give the presentation. Sounds good.
Okay.
During the hour of the meeting, though, I'll also extend an invitation to City of Steamboat Springs,
right.
Hayden, as well as Oak Creek and Yampa, as well, if anybody needs to present. So we'll see what we get. So I think
remembered that randomly, so thanks.
And that kind of stems from a conversation actually came out of our BRE survey a year ago about vision for the community and amongst business owners. And so providing a little bit of a kind of state of the state, I guess, but say kind of county level, municipality level, and trying to provide a forum for that, trying to get into that routine on an annual basis. With the EDC, we've got these three subcommittees. That are operating, the Business Development Committee, Education Committee, and the Public Policy Committee, as well as a Metrics Task Force this last year. I really wanted to highlight the Metrics Task Force. Over the last 2 years, as you know, I've worked to really define what economic development is, put a structure around this, and communicate more on what it looks like. And the next step here is adding in metrics specifically. And so had a metrics task force this last year, 4 individuals that reviewed best practices that were put together by International Economic Development Council, identified metrics that made sense for here, made sense for our county and our work, and we've got that, and now the next step is really integrating into each of these areas. Ultimately, because I want to have people to have a nice menu at the end of the year. I think that, you know, a briefing and a little memo like this is nice, but I'd like to simplify it a little bit more for general consumption. That's the direction that we're going there. I wanted to highlight that one. Moving on to strategic partners, any updates there that I have? I think, you know, we really had a good year with the strategic partners. That first year was me getting to know folks again in this new position, new role that I'm in, and then continuing our relationships. Obviously, with the state, we had a changeover in the administration, so we had to kind of reintroduce ourselves and work on a couple projects. One that I am really excited about on page 3 is the new Small Business Development Center Regional Director, which is going to be hosted by Eagle County. I know that the Small Business Development Center for Northwest Colorado has struggled having a home. Eagle County is going to host them, and a lot of the conversation that I've had there is identify opportunities where the Small Business Development Center does not overlap with the Entrepreneurship Center to provide resources here locally. So one of the items that Aaron McCuskey, who's the new regional director, is working with is CU's Deming Center for Entrepreneurship. And we're more than likely get a 5-year commitment from them to do an entrepreneurship program based in Hayden over the next 5 years. I think that makes sense.
What is the Deming Center for Entrepreneurship?
Deming, I believe, is the last name of the donor, but it's the Entrepreneurship Center at their lead school of business.
Oh, okay.
So focused on, you know, really just small business entrepreneurship activities. And so they've started this program in Chaffee County, and were successful there with the Chaffee County Economic Development Corporation, and just looking for other counties around the state that they can do this program. So they're really interested in here. So I'm excited about that one, and I think that'll be a good addition for getting some programming into Hayden specifically. Obviously, here we have the Entrepreneurship Center, which serves the entire county, but the focus tends to be on Steamboat Springs. Rural Technical Assistance Program, AG&C, the Economic Development District, you guys are all aware of all of this. We can skip through that highlight. Moving on to the activities, the conversation around Smart Wool and response to that continues. Continue to work with OEdit on different items related to that. Even today, there was a grant announcement that came from OEdit for the Steamboat Gravel Race for $50,000 marketing. They continue to throw resources this direction, which is good, and that's helpful, and that's due to ongoing conversation about this. Just trying to elevate it and ensure that folks continue to think about it. Obviously, Smart Wool will be moving.
In the gravel race, do they actually stay here and spend money?
Yeah, they do, and so that's what's important, right?
I'm surprised you need to market it. Doesn't it fill up in like?
It did. It
sold out in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
So then, what do you do with your marketing money?
That is a great question. I will work with them on it to figure that out. Yeah.
Right. But I think that's, you know, I mean, that's the key to it, is throwing some resources to some of these that, you know, spread around to attracting visitation. But it's also a good model for some other communities that we can see in the state, you know, for events like that. So this is ongoing. Smart will be leaving in June this next year. So the conversation continues on that one.
Well, it's good news. Sounds good news for the city and the airport that the that they've got the
Honey Stinger, right?
Yes,
rented.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that. That's a relief. My recommendations was look at government entities that may be willing to take on a longer term lease. I think one of the risks with a private entity is, you know, the cut and go. So in 5 or 10 years, you could have be back in the exact same position.
Yeah.
Whereas if you looked at state or federal offices, you know, maybe that would have led to longer term leases. So,
yeah.
But I think that's, you know, it's a good opportunity and you know, certainly got to fill that the lease there. Moving on to the programs. Section on page 6, business retention and expansion, that's really the cornerstone of economic development, right? I mean, that's having conversation with your businesses, knowing what's going on, what are their biggest issues. We've got the survey and one-on-one meetings that happen there. There's a short list of some of the companies that we've met with, Moots, Peabody, Wagner Equipment, Atlantic Aviation, Smart Wall, and it goes on from there. The next step, though, is really the Industry Clusters Program, and I have to recognize the Economic Development Council for working on this larger strategy here, you know, and how we do this and what makes sense. You know, through the committees, we talk about this, and their guidance really informs what I'm doing here. So the industry clusters with ag, creative industries, location-neutral business, and outdoor products, those continue to be the four ones that we want to focus on. Why? Those tend to be higher paying, above average annual salaries, $42,000 and above. That's where, you know, in economic development, that's where you can make the most difference, is being really specific and targeting key sectors that have an opportunity for growth. In outdoor products, and when I talk about outdoor recreation, we're specifically talking about outdoor gear products. You know, it's smart wool, honey stinger, holla, all of these that are really focused in that area, moots, right? So there's some updates there. One of the key items that I was really happy about this last year is that we were able to get a rural technical assistance grant from OEDIT to engage our 15, 16 outdoor rec businesses on the idea of creating, essentially it's a trade association, right? So think of the county here, you know, we've got ag and extractive industries, right? And so then the next step for communities in economic development is really going after tourism, you know? And so to be focused on a cluster, you develop a, you know, a tourism association, perhaps a hospitality or a restaurants association or lodging association, trade associations. Well, what are the next steps up? And how do you move beyond that and move up the ladder? The outdoor gear products, you know, there really isn't a local group. Folks know each other, but they don't get together and talk about, you know, what are their issues and how can they coordinate better and advocate for themselves. So this is underway. We had consultants who were graduate students from the University of Colorado, really dove in and leveraged the work that the EDC had already done to put a plan in place. And we had a presentation at Smart Wool prior to Christmas, a decent turnout, and we'll continue on the next steps. I'm really committed to doing this this project, and I think it's a smart way to go, and it's a smart tactic for this. Want to move on to this next year, but I think if we scan through this, was there anything else I wanted to mention? I think that's about it. Both the quality of life items and economic well-being, you know, both of those really are community surveys that we need to keep track of. And then just commentary there at the end. I wanted to jump to the last page, though, page 11 and page 12. You know, these are two key points, you know, to keep an eye on. First, on at the top of page 11, is business establishments between 2018 and 2019. We've increased 24 additional business establishments. Employment's gone up by additional 44, and wages up by $32. And so you can look down at the different sectors and start to see, you know, where there has been some changes and some fluctuation there. Below that, though, is the location quotient. This is really when you're thinking about finance and where you're, you know, how your portfolio is allocated across all different sectors. One is the most diverse. That's essentially the nation. And you can see where we're more reliant on some of these other sectors, such as extraction, arts and entertainment, recreation. That's where you know, tourism, hospitality lands, you know, and so these are the sectors that we're much more reliant on versus others where we're not as reliant on, and there's certainly opportunities for growth. All of those that fall under one, those are the ones you want to focus on a little bit more. So these are pretty common economic development indicators and how you would balance your portfolio, I would say. And then on the last page, Commissioner Milton, I know you've seen me talk about this multiple times, but I think this
is... We actually had Jessica Bond in this morning, and
awesome.
She gave us a whole update. So
awesome. Good.
Yeah.
Good. And this is this is a key piece of, you know, per capita income versus your labor income. And that's the difference. This is where Route County is at. And a very diverse economy like Denver, those tend to track, right? Whereas a very, what I was, you know, a county that's less diverse, they're divergent there, you know. So I just want us to keep an eye on that and what that means. You know, that's really a question. You're talking about middle income, you know, and that's what that green line is.
I'm actually surprised that the average earnings per job, especially after having Jessica come in today and talk about the 1.9% unemployment, mm-hmm. how the average earnings per job hasn't had to have fallen, gone up. So mm-hmm.
we
across
are,
the board.
Right. I think, you know, we're seeing that initial indicators in talking to folks, you know, that's slow. I would say over the last 6 months in talking to some businesses, they have talked about how they've increased their hourly wages, starting hourly wages. And that's not showing up in the data yet.
It becomes a competition amongst everybody.
It is.
Even
exactly.
for unskilled workers.
You're right. And that's not showing up in the data yet. But just kind of word on the street and talking to folks, they're bumping it up more and more. You know, and that's just reaction in the market. So,
and I don't know how many employers we have that are paying minimum wage. I don't know how much the minimum wage increase mm-hmm. might. as well,
mm-hmm.
we'll see.
Right, we'll see. And I think one of, you know, there was one specific manufacturer that I was surprised with in the outdoor rec industry, what they're starting wages now, because they had to up it. Mm-hmm. And so they're starting at $16 an hour, which I was, that's interesting. That's pretty good. So moving on to the next packet, the big one here, I sat down a couple weeks ago, both with city and county staff, as well, and chamber as well, to walk through the economic development plan for 2020. This, you know, again, it follows those 10 areas, but I just kind of wanted to hit a couple items here. This is what we're looking at for this next year. We kind of walked through this when submitted the funding request, but if we jump down into, I guess, obviously, investors, this is what it takes with all of our investors, the work that's put into it. Staff, I really wanted to mention here, and part of it is having both Laura and Sarah here, is how important, you know, the whole team is at the Chamber for the economic development. There's different aspects of this work that they're helping with, you know, if it's the Economic Summit or if it's the magazines that we have, the MoveTube guide and all of that, which is so important. So, administrative EDC, this is kind of the plan for the EDC this next year, what it looks like. Most notably, under the subcommittees is the Ad Hoc Membership and Governance Committee. There's been a little bit of ambiguity as far as membership and governance, and I'm really grateful Commissioner Melton's going to help out with this next year. Strategic partners, this is the usual. Keep going with all the different strategic partners that we have. I find it hard to kind of quantify the relationships and how important that is. You know, but being able to pick up the phone and have conversations about different projects that are happening and just kind of bounce things off of folks is important, as well as being able to have some influence on different programs that the state's putting together. For example, their location-neutral employment program, which when they recruit in new businesses, they will be able to incentivize location-neutral employees that are located in rural Jumpstart communities. So they kind of start to build off of each other here. So programming this next year on page 5, this will be more of the same this year. Business retention and expansion, industry clusters, business attraction, and then economic data. And this is one of the items that we're going to expand. As we've talked about it before, I spent a lot of time on this, but we're going to add some key economic data tools to our website. Marketing, and let's see. Continue with our conferences, education, and then just the same items for policy, quality, life, and economic well-being. So I think that what's most important for this next year, and this is key to economic development, is putting a plan in place and sticking with that year after year after year for a longer term. Oftentimes, economic development will get distracted with a shiny object and tack one direction or another. So I guess that's kind of where I wanted to leave it and leave some time for us to talk about any other issues or questions or kind of thoughts that you have. I know, yeah, if you met with Jessica this morning, there's probably some interesting workforce items. So thank you.
Thank you.
So I guess the question, so we got back to you with your budget request and we decided not to fund the part with the realtors and the rest.
Correct.
Are you heading there, or are you going to talk about that, or
yes,
do you need to talk about that, or and again, we appreciated the other part that
yep.
you were going to do, and the rest, and it's just kind of like, well, you know, if that was important to those guys,
yeah.
they ought to be able to get their own act together. And
well, and I think that was after the conversation that I had with the board, went back and questioned via survey, what would you be willing to pay in? You know, I think that was what I heard, I think specifically it was from you, is, you know, maybe there should be some additional skin in the game from those that benefit directly from it.
Yeah.
And so went back and asked, you know, what would you be willing to put in, you know? And that ran the gamut anywhere from $100 to $2,000. I was really surprised on the high end. So I haven't put together the exact number of what it is, but I think that makes sense for folks to pay in, and so that'll cover that.
I didn't say that it wasn't appropriate.
Yeah.
I just didn't know whether it was really appropriate for us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that was really good guidance.
The skin in the game.
Yeah. Like no, I think that was good guidance for me. I hadn't thought around it that way, but back to the drawing table, trying to figure out a different way to do it. So I think that's probably the right way to go, and we'll be able to make it happen. Most importantly, though, the data piece, that was really important, and I really appreciate that, and that's going to be really helpful. I can't say how much time that takes providing.
No,
so.
You mean to outside people wanting mm-hmm. to see the data?
Yeah, either local, you know, we've got local businesses here that are trying to figure out some of their, you know, figure out and understand the market, you know, as well as outside businesses that are looking at moving in here, you know, and be able to provide that information one off. It just, it gets to be a little bit much sometimes, so, which is helpful. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. So, looking forward to that this year. It'll be a good addition. So, what else? Any other thoughts, questions, big issues that we need to cover?
There's always big issues, John.
I know, right. Cool.
I guess I just attended the Hayden joint meeting with the town of Hayden last night and the school district.
Oh, good.
Regarding the yep. potential of the building and,
yeah.
and Mary Alice
is
now the champion down there, so she'll be a good champion with Matt and the rest. So they're looking forward to some opportunity on this whole project for so I don't know what that means for them and my community out there mm-hmm. a little bit more so. But anyhow, it's a good opportunity. So.
I see it as a good opportunity. I think that I've attended the meetings that they've had, some of the planning sessions, and have really, you know, I think that it's something that has to be community driven at the local level.
Absolutely.
Know? So just going and listening, as you know, we've talked about, and it's. I'm encouraged by it. I think that there is certainly a good opportunity in having a facility like that. I think, you know, I was hoping that there would be an opportunity to have some sort of business development center in there.
Yep.
But it looks like we'll be able to have that opportunity elsewhere to do that, because I think that's I think that's really important. I think that's important for that community, is to have some sort of location that's focused on business development, specifically be it people that are location neutrals or people that, you know, work at some of the large employers that are interested in starting their own business at some point and are not having to commute into Steamboat in the evenings or whatever, and they're able just to do it locally in their own community. So I think that would be really helpful. Obviously, we need more resources to do that, and having Mary Alice there is tremendous. I'm so excited about that. We had lunch last week and sat down and chatted about what it means. I think that's a huge blessing. So looking forward to meeting the new town manager, though, in Oak Creek. So working a little bit more with them and the South Rad Economic Development Council this next week. So.
Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
Yeah.
I feel like keep me in the loop.
Tune in,
so,
try to.
Go to the chamber meetings, go to the EDC meetings. Like, I know the stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, we've continued working on the Commissioner Beck and I on the Just Transition Committee, and that'll be really interesting. I got Valen told to head up the Economic and Community Development Subcommittee of that. So
that's fantastic.
I'm sure I'll have questions for you.
That's fantastic. Let me know. I want to help you with that.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be really interesting, though, because I think the legislation required a plan from that committee back to the legislature by, like, June, July. I mean, it's super quick.
It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
There's pretty, good ideas out there.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's good work. It's important work. And hopefully something will come of it. Part of it's going to have to be tracking down money, though. I mean, that's the biggest thing, finding money. But Paul Major is heading up part of that effort, which I think will be good.
Yeah, he's a great resource.
Raise all over it. Yeah, Telluride Foundation. Yep. And Dennis Dougherty, who's AFL-CIO, is chairing that committee, and he's a taskmaster. He's like, you need to have your subcommittee meeting before January 17th. Okay. I'm on it.
Well, it's great for Northwestern Colorado to have two commissioners on that, I think, to guide that.
Yeah.
That's really important. You know, guide that conversation in the direction that it goes, especially the needs, you know. And hopefully in the funding, whatever that would look like with the state later on. So
the only other thing, and I don't think we need to talk about it right now, but I've expressed this to you before, is just having an understanding of what the opportunities might be if they exist with the EDD designation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what, if anything, we should be engaging in to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Locally.
No. I did get a chance to meet with Trent Thompson, the covers Colorado and Wyoming, I think, for U.S. Economic Development Administration, kind of talking around Hayden just a little bit. I think that that's important to be planting some seeds there. We'll see. So I think, certainly with the designation, my view of the designation is that just gives you a couple additional points when you do go after some funding.
So. Yeah, definitely. That makes sense.
So the same question, were you going to ask that? Why don't you? I was.
Go ahead, Dan.
It was appropriate, so.
We had Jessica on this morning, and
good. We learned how to pronounce her last name.
Holland.
Like Holland, rhymes with Holland. Yeah. That's what she
is that how she said it? I think that only took me two.
Yeah.
And you were talking about county's obviously starting the master plan process, and we looked at some of the initial survey responses. We got about 450 right now.
450.
And it's a phase we're at is trying to get out and talk to more people, and so that's one thing. Just if there's ideas on outreach, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Work on that.
We can lend a hand there.
The other thing is, within the survey, one of the questions is, what are the top five weaknesses for the county? And, I don't think there's any major surprises here, but housing costs is the first, and job opportunities is the third.
Yep.
Availability of housing is the second, so they're kind of all linked.
Yeah.
So,
And the survey is not final. I mean, this is ongoing, but this is initial results you're kind of tracking right now.
So, I mean, I think you intend to dig into this, the initial survey with future surveys and more outreach and other opportunities to gather some detail on that. But I guess not that surprising, I'm sure, but it's also one of those things that, like, feeds into what you're doing and more how we can maybe work together on what all this is telling us.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, collaborating with some of the materials that you have or are able to, we have a website for the navigate your route effort and so putting information there for context and also maybe coming and talking to our planning commission who are the folks who are going to be making a lot of the, the recommendations if nothing else of the various steps we might take to address some of this stuff.
Okay. So, that makes sense. I would think that we would probably... I don't know if we probably help out with social media. Maybe do a post
on it.
Absolutely.
It's countywide, so most of our communications are going to be somewhat focused. And Steamboat, we can do social. There's definitely ways we can help.
We just be on that. So,
cool. And just thinking audiences too, right? Like
the
actual presentations.
Yeah. And, I've seen a lot of Jessica's presentations, but I would go back to, on the annual report, both page 11 and 12. I think that informs a lot of what I would presume she talked about. So,
yeah.
As well.
She talked There's about the fact that we have so many people. Well, that's what's striking to me, the retirements coming up.
And then we have a super educated workforce that's probably working way underneath their skill levels, too.
So we have a lot of low-skill jobs and a lot of high-skill people.
Yeah, the talent that we have here is tremendous.
Yeah, and then we can't educate people into higher-paying jobs because it's not, the jobs don't exist.
And what's interesting is that we... The population here, there's a higher percent of the population that has higher education degree, higher than Washington, D.C. It's close on par with Boulder. Not as high as a place like Los Alamos in New Mexico, obviously, because those are nuclear scientists. But, it's really highly educated population here.
That's what she was sharing with us.
Yep. Fascinating. Cool.
It is really fascinating. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your work.
We'll get out of here.
Appreciate it.
I'll see you later.
Very good, John. Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. As always. Thank you. Go see you.
We didn't get much out of you two girls, but, it's all right.
I was waiting for the hard question.
So I guess...
It's all you, Deanna.
There you go.
Hello. So this is our yearly postings. We're saying where we're going to post our agendas for your commissioner meetings. It will be on the bulletin board up here on the third floor of Rouse County Courthouse, as well as the second floor.
Great. I have no questions about that.
All right.
Do you have any questions, Doug?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move we approve Resolution 2020-2. Designating the place for the posting and notices of the meetings, Rob County Board of County Commissioners.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then our second item is approval of our 2020 appointments list.
So then after our discussion this morning with... Did we find that one? We need to take that one off?
Yeah, so just...
There are a few updates that we will have to ratify later on that we're waiting for confirmation. That's fine. But the number 29, which is the Northwest Regional Workforce Board, it's our understanding that that's been dissolved, so we can just remove that from the appointments list.
Number 29.
I'll make that my motion.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So.
All right. Thank you.
So, Madam, are you ready?
I'm ready. Okay. My very last one.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the 2020 commissioner appointment list, and with that modification of 29 being removed and all the subsequent ones being renumbered as presented in the agenda packet.
Second. Any other discussion?
That needs to go into effect after our next meeting. So you can run the rest of the meeting.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Deb. It's very generous. Okay, effective.
At our next meeting, yeah.
Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, January 13th. Well, yeah.
Now I think, yeah.
Yeah, we...
It's effective.
It's effective now. Yeah, so Tim will be the official signer.
Signer of documents. We're good. All right, come on up, Kathy.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
I'm good. How's the changing of the guards going?
Well, we haven't had the ceremonial switching of the chairs yet, so.
Yeah, well.
You get paid more for that.
Mr. Corrigan was wimping out on us today, so.
Yeah, he's just. It's all right. You're the only thing after the changing of the guards, so we'll just carry on.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
So I am here for your review and approval of the new Public Health Administrative Specialist pay scale. Carrie Ladrow is requesting to add a Public Health Administrative Specialist position. This position will report directly to the Public Health Director under general supervision. I have evaluated the job description against Employers Council salary information and benchmarked it against Administrative 3, utilizing resort salary data. I have also reviewed the position against the county's job admin evaluation factors, and the job description meets the point factor of an administrative assistant for pay scale. I have submitted that pay scale to you and the job description and the survey information for your approval. The proposed annual salary at step one of the pay scale is $44,705. However, that is based on 2019 data, and it will that pay scale will get bumped up 2% based on your approved salary cost of living adjustment.
So I guess, so two questions. So mm-hmm. First off, the job description, does it fit the new format? Is it going to be fitting the new format? Or?
So I have, well, I have started formatting the job descriptions to match the format that we're moving into.
Right.
But I'm also forwarding these to CPSHR for them to capture in their job descriptions.
And that administrative specialist language is in the new classification system, is it not?
We have current specialists, okay, but they don't fall under the admin category. So I'm going to wait and see how they digest this.
Sounds good.
And we're approving the pay scale for this position, which is benchmarked or the same as the admin four.
As job. Our admin fours and benchmarked against the admin three for Employers Council salary survey data.
Right. I'm good.
Yeah, yep.
So
absolutely.
I just wanted to make sure,
yep,
since we're doing some new stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
This new stuff conforms with the new stuff that we're doing. So that was my
smart
thought. So, yeah, we're good. Madam Chair, I move that we approve the new Public Health Administrative Specialist pay scale as presented.
Second. Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks.
Thanks.
Very good.
And the Childhood Care and Learning Program Administrator position?
That is not on the agenda.
I know, but I just... He just signed off on it, so you will get that.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you said we were looking at it.
No,
right
I'm
now.
Sorry.
God, you're fine.